Hallo, ich bin Jan Hutanus und ich moderiere auf Jazzradio Berlin den Samstagvormittag. Am 2.3. hatte ich die Möglichkeit, im Rahmen der Berlinale 2021 mit den Machern der Serie Philly D.A. zu sprechen. Philly D.A. ist die erste Dokumentarserie, die in der Kategorie Berlinale Series jemals gezeigt wurde. Und ich muss zugeben, ich fand das gesamte Projekt sehr spannend. Es geht um Politik, es geht um Amtsmissbrauch, es ist, um nach den ersten beiden Folgen zu urteilen, fast schon eine Kriminalserie. Seit 2017 begleitet das Filmteam um Ted Passan, Nicole Salazar und Yoni Brook den neuen Staatsanwalt der Stadt Philadelphia, Larry Krasner. Philadelphia weist zu der Zeit eine der höchsten Inhaftierungsraten der gesamten USA auf und die Menschen wollen und brauchen eine Reform. Larry Krasner selbst war lange Zeit Anwalt der vom System Benachteiligten und setzte sich gratis vor Gericht für Protestanten der Black Lives Matter Bewegung oder auch Occupy Philadelphia ein. In seiner Karriere als Anwalt verklagte das Police Department von Philadelphia rund über 75 Mal. Er gewinnt die Wahl zum Staatsanwalt haushoch oder auch mit einem Landslide-Win, wie man in den USA so schön sagt, und sieht sich jetzt als, ich sage mal, neues Zahnrad in einem alten Getriebe mit allerlei Problemen konfrontiert. Aber um nichts vorwegzunehmen, hier das Interview. Hi guys, how are you? Nice to meet you. Ted, if you like to tell in your own words, what is Philly DA about?
I think the big picture answer is that, you know, kind of the story underneath what we're looking at is we're looking at, you know, what happens when people try to change the institutions that govern their lives. What does it mean to try to take the world around you and try to make it the world you want it to be, and how hard that is? And, you know, one of the things that I think was important for us is that, you know, there's a lot of stories that when they talk about social change, they either the story, like in the way the stories are told or the films are made, a lot of the times the stories about politicians end right at the election. You know, they make all these promises and then get elected and then the end, you know, or if the story is about some big, you know, social change that happened, you typically hear about the victory and you don't hear about the years and years and years of hard work it took to get that victory. And so I think in terms of the storytelling around change, people have this idea that it should be easier or that it should be sexier or more romantic or simpler. And, you know, so I think when they get in those positions, it's really easy to feel demoralized or burned out that they're doing something wrong, that this isn't working, it's not what I expected, and they give up. And so we think it's important that storytellers also be telling stories about, you know, how hard it is to make change and how normal it is that it's difficult and there's fighting and people don't agree and you take two steps forward and one step back and how it's part of the process. And we think, you know, even though our story is set in the criminal justice system, you could take these lessons and apply them anywhere. To the human experience.
And why did you choose to make Philly DA a series and not a film?
Well, I think one of the things that happened for us is that, you know, in the beginning we thought it was going to be a feature for probably about the first year that we worked on it. And then we realized at some point that there was no version of a feature that wouldn't be so reductive to the subject matter, wouldn't be so simple, that it would totally destroy our main goal of creating something that was like nuanced and experiential, where you felt like you were there and you were really like experiencing the system. We just felt like we couldn't crack the code in a feature. And we also just felt like that to be true to the subject matter, to understand the power of the district attorney, to understand what that position really is and what it means in our society, you have to see that power play out. And it plays out in all these different arenas, not just in this one way. And so it felt much more exciting and more interesting and more true to the subject matter to be telling multiple stories that all show that power and that discretion and what it can do and what it can't do and all these different ways that we could show it through all these different characters. What was also important to us too was to not just tell the story of the people who are making the decisions, but to tell the story of the people whose lives are being impacted by those decisions. Yeah. And so as the series goes on, you meet more and more characters from different walks of life who are all in this together, you know, people who are lawyers, who are trying to defend clients, people who are in city government, people who are in prison, people who are on probation, people who are police officers. And in order to like show this more 360-degree comprehensive view of a city going through a historic change, we just needed the time, and we were never going to be able to accomplish that in a feature. And that's what we felt would be the most, you know, engaging and responsible and also just exciting project.
My first thought was this series could be a good promotion for the Democratic Party and the freshly elected President Joe Biden. But the story started much earlier. It all takes place in 2017 in Trump America. Where did you get your inspiration to make this series, and was the Trump presidency a part of it?
I mean, I think, you know, part of what brought Larry Krasner into office is in some ways a reaction to the Trump election, because I think that was a moment when a lot of people who maybe had been a bit less engaged suddenly realized that they have to be more engaged in electoral politics. And, you know, the DA election in Philadelphia just happened to be, you know, at the end of 2017, kind of on the heels of Trump's victory. So I do think, you know, across the country, there was sort of a stepping up of people wanting to pay attention. But that sort of also was happening in parallel to the movement for criminal justice reform in the United States, which has been going on, you know, for at least 10 years, if not longer. And more people sort of mobilizing around these questions and sort of the idea that, you know, we have these elected officials all across the country, because to just step back for a second, sort of criminal justice within the United States is a very decentralized system. So even, you know, whether we have Trump in office or we have Biden in office, and that does sort of, you know, set a sort of national idea in terms of the tenor of the country, but really the decisions being made that are putting most people in prison or jail are happening at a local level, at the state level and at the county level. And so all across the country, we have these 2,500 elected district attorneys who, for the most part, for the last several decades, have been running unchallenged. There really haven't been people stepping up and saying, you know, instead of doing this law and order thing, instead of just locking people up for more and more time, more and more people, let's try something different. So really, you know, even preceding Trump, this idea that, you know, we need to sort of reclaim these offices for a different vision had been percolating. And so, you know, what enabled Larry to come into office was sort of a confluence of these two things. One, a lot of people sort of reacting to the Trump moment, but then two, a lot of activists and organizers and regular Philadelphians sort of mobilizing on the ground level saying, you know, we need criminal justice reform, we need it now, and like, here's a new way to try and get at that project by changing who is in the district attorney's office.
Do you think the landslide win of Larry Krasner is another perfect example for a strong grassroots movement like the 2017 campaign and later win of AOC over Congressman Joe Crowley in New York City? Or is it more of a normal career turnout since he was an attorney for over three decades?
It's actually, I mean, I see Ted has a lot he wants to say on this, but I will say that in, you know, if you understand, and I know for, you know, for an international audience, it's all sort of new, right? But traditionally these offices, prosecutors and defense attorneys are very different roles. And the traditional prosecutor really is a part of this culture of this, you know, lock them up and throw away the key sort of mentality, where it really is about punishment, you know, maximizing charges, maximizing sentencing. And of course, I'm speaking with a broad brush. That's not every prosecutor. There's a lot of, you know, positive kinds of work that prosecutors can do and have done. However, the culture by and large has been this very punitive system and very aligned with police and other law enforcement to sort of achieve those kinds of goals. So Larry Krasner built his career as a civil rights attorney, sort of defending activists, defending people charged with crimes, sort of, you know, fighting the DA's office from the outside for his entire career. Yeah. And so even though it is somewhat traditional for prosecutors to leave the office and become defense attorneys, it's actually nearly unheard of for someone to go from being a defense attorney to then leading the law enforcement agency, such as the prosecutor's office. So it's actually a very unusual career move. And on top of that, just in terms of the alignment between prosecutors and police, and this is sort of one of the reasons why in the United States we have such an issue with there being a lack of accountability for police brutality or police misconduct, is that, you know, prosecutors rely on police to make their cases, to make their charges stick. And so that sort of professional overlap has made them traditionally very, amongst other factors, very reluctant to charge police officers. But Larry, as in his role as a civil rights attorney, you know, sued the police over 75 times, in some ways sort of stepping into the role of the what would have been a prosecutor had prosecutors been taking on that role. So he actually, you know, stepped into a position where he was, even though he was an outsider to government, he was very well known to all of the players in Philadelphia because he had been this sort of activist outsider attorney for so many decades. So when he, it wasn't a normal turn, I'll just say that.
In the first episode, there was this elderly woman on the street and she got asked about Krasner and she answered that Larry Krasner would enable anarchy in Philadelphia. Did he really enable anarchy? What do you think is the turnout of his agenda so far?
Well, it depends who you ask. You know, there are some people who really feel like he's destroying the city just by nature of what he's doing. There's other people that feel like he's making it way better, way more fair, way more just. And this speaks to one of the challenges that anybody in Larry's position has, which is kind of the narrative around, well, how's it going? Mm-hmm. Because it's a really hard thing to measure. And it's very easy for somebody to say, like, point at, you know, one weekend of bad shootings or even just crime going up at all and just say, well, that must be his fault, you know, even though there's no evidence that that's actually true. And so one of the things that we look at in the series is that fight over the story of what's happening. And it's very easy to just say, well, he's letting people out of prison. That's scary. It's making you unsafe. It's very easy to make that argument because it seems to make sense. And what Larry is doing seems very counterintuitive. And so it's much harder for him to make that argument. And the people who oppose him are often just making their simple argument over and over and over. And it's very hard to combat that. Now, at the same time, since we finished filming, there has been a major spike in homicides in Philadelphia. However, there's also been a major spike in homicides all around the country ever since COVID. So, you know, there's that too. And also before Larry took office, homicides were going up every single year for the previous 5 years. You know, but then people now try to blame him for that when it's a trend that had been going. You know, I think all in all, one of the things that we hope to show in the series is that, like, the things that actually cause crime and that can prevent crime are not tools that the district attorney's office really has. Like, the things that actually are shown to prevent crime are education, are, you know, access to resources and healthcare, to not having the crushing weight of poverty over you the entire time because there's social services that will help you and so you won't be left without a safety net. It's these things that actually stop crime. And you know, but there's going to be a continued fight about what he's doing regardless because of the fear narrative.
My last question for you, Yoni Brook. One hears a lot that the U.S. is a very politically divided country. Did you get involved in any trouble between the DA's office, the police department, and citizens? And what were the difficulties in general you had to face filming this series?
Well, I'll say that the biggest thing that made us possible to make this film is that we're local Philadelphia filmmakers. So we could spend time here to build relationships. A lot of the rhetoric you sometimes see in the news is sort of like sound bites. And I think if you can get underneath the sound bites, you can understand why people have these different political viewpoints. And I think part of what we wanted to do in the series was to explore, you know, what each side was saying so that you couldn't just look at the people who said it's going to be anarchy and dismiss them and not understand a little bit of what was underneath that for them. So just as an example, you know, the difficulties of making the series was that, you know, the DA's office, Larry Krasner, agreed to our demands that we have editorial control and we could make the series we wanted to make, even if it made him not look great all the time. But everybody else in his office, including his own media department, communications department, told him, do not make this series. You are a political figure now. You need to get reelected in a few years. We need to make you look good. And we cannot control what these filmmakers are going to do. And so this was the message that was kind of sent to the entire office. Larry Krasner, I think, was open to some scrutiny. But he's his own person. Nobody else in the office was told to cooperate with us, both the people who work with him and also the people who oppose him, meaning the people that you see in episode 2, like Lisa Harvey, who are very skeptical of some of his changes and the way he's doing it. So I think, you know, the hardest thing for us to do was to use the fact that we are local Philadelphians to go meet these people, not with our cameras rolling, but after work, go to the bars where they would hang out and talk to them about what we were doing and why we thought it was important that people get a 360 perspective of what was going on in Krasner's office. And that's how we got to make relationships with judges and police officers and other people you meet in the series. And to kind of, you know, you don't have to agree with them, what they're saying or why they feel that way, but we don't want to make them into a cardboard cutout villain of who they are. And Larry Krasner is a political official and he can sort of tell you who his enemies are and paint them as a way. But I think as filmmakers, as storytellers, you want to understand why that police officer thinks prison is a good idea for people who commit a crime. You want to understand why they think that way, and you want to do that in a way that's, you know, good faith, not mean-spirited to that person. So I think, you know, by virtue of us making those relationships, we were able to break through some of that black and white dichotomy.
Thank you very much, Yoni, and thank you, Nicole and Ted. Thank you for your time, and I hope there will be a re-election and you have the chance to make a season 2 of this wonderful series, and I can't wait to see the other episodes of it.
Oh, thank you for your question.
Thank you so much, Jan. It was great.
Sorry we couldn't stay longer.
Bye. Is there going to be jazz underneath us as we're...
Yeah, probably. We could play some easy listening jazz under it.
Thank you, everyone.
Ich hoffe, dieses Gespräch mit den Machern von Philly DA hat dich ein wenig neugierig machen können. Ich werde mir die restlichen 6 Folgen zu den schon gesehenen beiden auf jeden Fall noch angucken. Wer es nicht abwarten kann, die Serie zu verfolgen, kann das ab dem 20. April auf dem US-amerikanischen Sender PBS machen. Ansonsten geht's im Juni weiter bei der Berlinale. Dein Jan Otanus.